we need you to be a president.
Yeah.
So the person who said that, point.
I will open the joint interim task force on capital construction budget process for May 29th, 2014. Senator Girod should join us shortly. For now, he's excused. The first item on the agenda, and the only action item on the agenda, is the adoption of committee rules. I think these are pretty basic rules.
Yes.
I think we've seen them before.
Yeah. Is there a motion?
I would make the motion, Mr. Co-Chair, to adopt the proposed task force rules.
Okay. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Now, the next portion is just going to be sort of a broad discussion going through a couple of different, four different items. And one of the things before we get into that I would point out is that I wanted to make it clear before this got started that the bill that was introduced by myself and the House co-chair was in no way in reaction to the governor's executive order. I was actually the primary. Am I the primary conspirator?
You are the primary conspirator.
Yes, okay. I'm the primary conspirator.
I tried to get this entire task force to Representative Smith, but...
but just as a way of background, I had served, I think, about 18 months on an NCSL task force that... It wasn't just actually NCSL. It was NCSL and National League of Cities, National Association of Counties, National Association, whatever we have for treasurers, nationals, to basically rewrite a basic document on public budgeting, which means I attended about four meetings and all the work was done by staff and some of their recommendations. One of them was that people review the statutes by which they do budgeting on a regular basis, so that's how we got one task force. And the second one was actually just a couple of paragraphs about what people should be doing relative to evaluating their capital needs and planning for what resources they have and what needs they have. And it sort of stuck out to me because it didn't appear that we were doing anything really like that, other than being sort of what would happen is we go through a process, there'd be a lot of requests. Some of us have made efforts over the last 10, 15 years, actually 15, to try to get some of that process out a little bit more in the public light, sometimes successful, sometimes not so successful. So that's how that bill came about. Of course, almost simultaneous with that came out the governor's executive order. So we've got some discussion on the task force work plan and goals, and I'll probably turn that over to Erin and then see what questions we have.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. What we have and what I have provided you in advance of the meeting are several documents, a copy of the bill, a copy of a draft work plan. We have identified, LFO has identified which one of the affected statutes currently exist, and so you have a document that lists the statutes that have been found related to capital construction budget process. There's a chart, and then the subsequent detailed statutes are there. In addition, we have provided you a copy of the governor's executive order. And then lastly, there is, as one of our charges is to develop a current list of all state-owned property. We have a partial list that has been provided. It includes all the state-owned property. What is not there is information related to the Oregon University system, which I understand can become available. They are working on it. It's quite a substantial document, and we will get that to the committee once it is available. So that takes care of one of our first charges, which is to develop that list. So that is in the process of happening. What you have before you in the work plan is we have found that based on the charge of the committee, including identification of current statutes and consideration of which of those statutes are outdated, unnecessary, or need a modification, there is quite an extensive amount of work around identifying long-range goals and process for determining and implementing future future capital construction needs and the process for reviewing future requests and forecast of cost. And so there are four meetings slated over the summer and into September at which time to do that work. One of the goals of today would be to determine what direction to staff that you would like us to provide you with information for these long-range goals, as to what perspective do you want us to come from, in the sense that we have a document in terms of the governor's executive order, which certainly lays out a process and some recommendations and a template for how you would like us to consider information. In discussion with Mr. Rocco and his and Paul Siebert particularly has done some research as to how other states do their capital construction process, and we could certainly bring in some models from Utah and Alaska, and we can look at it from that perspective. So really the focus of today is to discuss what way you would like your staff to come with recommendations for you in the future, in the sense of bringing statutory changes, in the sense of bringing what type of presentations do you want to look at, or do you want us to work from the governor's executive order and use some of the criteria laid out there. And so that's the crux of what I hope to walk away from today with. And so that's why we provided you the governor's executive order. That is why we have provided you the identifiable statutes that currently exist. And as you will notice, there's not a lot of them, particularly in comparison to the state budget process statutes. And I do have a memo from Paul Siebert that does begin to lay out the how Utah does the capital construction prioritization process. And I have a document that's quite lengthy as well, so I can send that to you afterwards, but I can provide you the cover memo if that's the direction in which you want us to come from at future meetings. And so I will turn that back over to the committee as to what is the best approach and kind of what approach you would like us to take as we look at this process.
At this particular point, I think in terms of the work plan, first of all, I think that there may be a need for one additional meeting, okay. And we could probably double up one of the meetings in July or the next meeting, mm-hmm. Basically because I think this has become a really compressed process because of other pressing issues and special sessions and short sessions. So I just think there might be some additional need for time. I don't know if people are prepared to discuss here. I mean, I find some positives in the executive order, but there are some areas that I have some significant issues with the executive order. Obviously, I think one of the things, and maybe I don't know if we want to get into that yet, is that, you know, the executive order is very prescriptive and basically laying out potential parameters for expenditures over a 10-year period, actually based on a more positive projection of interest rates over the future than what the current projection is, because the current projection actually would bring this down by a fairly significant sum in terms of what your geo bond authority would be. Now, that could change 2 years from now or 4 years from now also. But I think that some review of the statutes that we have, some review of the governor's executive order, at least consideration of what some other states are doing. To tell you the truth, one of the reasons that I think it's important to do this now is that and maybe Representative Buckley or Representative Smith can chime in here. Let me just try to give a short list, okay? We got a major request from OHSU, which we funded, which actually would fall outside your parameters in the executive order. We have started to fund courthouses. Now, if they were all like Union County at $2 million,
okay.
I think it's Jefferson County at $4 million, that would be one thing. But Multnomah,
yeah,
it would be about $250 million, and I don't know how much of that is anticipated to be state. And then if you want to really get a, become afraid, start looking at some of the other larger courthouses around the state. Now, that's like a new request on the table. There's a new request that's going to be coming in because the door is now open for school districts in terms of, and I've had some discussions with people there, and I've told them that literally the state's role could be pretty minor given how large the need is and given what the constraints are. And then added on to that, it's even accounted for in the executive order, the treasurer's proposal that the underlying enabling constitutional amendment will probably pass in November. And also, I don't really at this point have a very clear feeling of for how the executive order was developed, in the sense of, I would think, I'm going on too long here, but I would think if you look at the, if you look at all of the state assets for both in terms of the executive branch and the state capital, because I think that's the only thing we have, actually, and you look at higher education, there have to be some underlying numbers. It doesn't mean that they're stagnant. It doesn't mean that you won't change how you do things. I mean, we can't really say that we're going to need all the state buildings that we currently have. We can't really say that we're not going to need new state buildings in some areas. On the higher ed side, there have been some very significant issues in terms of we have started now for the regionals. We used to use lottery bonds. We very occasionally would get a G bond because somehow a regional would come up with the match. Very rarely, but we'd use lottery bonds. Now we've moved away from lottery bonds with regionals, and we're using Q bonds, which don't have to be matched, and they're not lottery bonds. So in some sense, that's opened up dollars on the lottery side. There are just so many issues out here that maybe we need to take a broader look. And because it seems like every session that we have a new list of requests that are outside the normal parameters. And then you've got the issue, I mean, you have a, in the executive order, there's a fairly significant amount of dollars dedicated here to infrastructure needs at the local level. And I don't know what, I serve actually on one of the groups that actually makes those allocations. But I don't know how that reflects historically. I don't know to what degree, you know, it's been a long time since the federal government's been a major participant. But are we trying to replace the federal government? Are we trying to fill in where local jurisdictions can't come up with the local resources? I mean, there's just a lot of issues. And maybe what we'll end up with is something that's not that prescriptive, but just getting something on the table so people are making more logical choices, and that they know when they do one thing that they're actually, the price of that is they're giving up the ability to do something else. So, Representative Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I can share with you that your General Government Subcommittee on Ways and Means discussed was just getting our arms around what do we already have. And I know we joked about it before we gaveled down, but to me, I would hope one of the action items we would look at is working with the Department of Administrative Services just genuinely to know what do we own, and what is the useful life, and what are those depreciation needs, or you know, what is the useful life of buildings, what are the renovation needs on our existing assets.
Yeah.
It's one thing to build new while we have other assets that might have greater needs as well. And so I would hope, you know, when I report back to the General Government Subcommittee, I could say this is something that we talked about.
Okay. And one of the things I might say, I know it's hard to put this list together, so I'm expecting that it's being compiled, and I may be misreading it, but from the list, the replacement value for the state library is about $20 million. if the state library is 20 million, then this building here can't be more than 50. So some of these replacement values must be values that are historically generated values. And
I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Our data is, let's say, uneven.
Yeah.
Across the state. So.
If we could make progress in that regard of updating the assets of the state building lists, and get some clarity in terms of the deferred maintenance that we actually are responsible for, to me, just getting that done would be a huge step forward. The discussions, I think, on a kind of future approach, I think are great to have. I'm a little bit cautious about, you know, saying that this group will be able to set out a 10-year plan or anything,
yeah,
anything like that. Some because, as you've mentioned, as our capacity gets determined every session and the needs of the state evolve,
yeah,
I think we have to have the flexibility to adjust that, just as with any other area of the budget.
Well, and I think everybody recognizes that the governor's change, legislature's change. I think the idea, though, is not to so much, and that's one of the issues I actually had with the executive order, is setting out specific amounts that would be dedicated in so many areas, because sometimes when you put in specific amounts, you build expectations at the same time. And, but I just think just to be able to go into this with your eyes fully open every time you approve a major capital project, so that you kind of know you're making a choice, and that choice is going to actually, under normal circumstances, since we're not the federal government, is going to preclude you being able to make other choices. So Mr. Rock was always very quiet. Why don't we let that side of the room talk
for a while?
You notice how we wised up on the second committee, because the first committee is even. This one, we outnumber them.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've been looking into getting you some information based on our initial understanding of what this task force is charged with doing. And so we did work with the Department of Administrative Services to come up with this initial list of properties or buildings owned. Each one of these, there's a report item on each one. It looks like this. So there's a lot more information. This is for each building.
Yeah.
And we just selected some of the fields to have downloaded to provide you with a summary report. There's apparently close to 1,600 pages like this of properties. Some of are big buildings, some are very small, you know, ODOT things, sheds and stuff. So it's a very wide and broad list.
Well,
this does not include OUS. We've worked with OUS to get a list from them they develop for insurance purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have condition of the building or anything.
Yeah.
And I think, as Aaron mentioned, that we can make that available to you once we clean it up a little bit.
Well, and I do know some of the campuses do have also pretty extensive lists in terms of when they've rated, in a sense, evaluated what the cost of renovation of a building
is. That's true, Mr. Chair, but it's not uniform, and it's done differently by each campus. There's no system-wide thing, and now with the evolution of the university system, it's even going to be less consistent over time. So we're looking into other information that's out there for that. The one question I have about this is, beyond just capital construction, is there's no mention in here, although they're tied together, is bonding practices and policies, and if that's part of this, if what you're looking for or not, because not all capital construction projects are bonded, but there are capital construction activities that are funded with federal funds and other kinds of resources but the bulk of the projects I think you're talking about are bonded indebtedness towards capital construction. Are you interested in these other non-bonded projects?
Well, I think actually I'm not as interested in the other projects, and obviously we're not going to get into transportation projects other than maybe Connect Oregon. But I mean, the Transportation Commission determines transportation projects. It's totally kind of, and if you wanted to make this really complex, you'd open up that door, and then you'd start talking about the condition of state and local facilities. But I think probably not so much the projects that are, funded without bonding, but probably one of the areas that is in the executive order is probably something we have to look at also, and that's in terms of information infrastructure, technology infrastructure, because that's a I noticed I go to a meeting this afternoon. You want to come to my meeting this afternoon? Okay. So in the meeting this afternoon, it's outlining existing IT projects, and although it's not all state funds, much of it's federal, some of it's other funds. But I think the number is somewhere in the $670 million range of current IT projects.
That's a relatively low estimate, Senator.
Yes. Yeah. That doesn't include planned projects.
I think we're north of a billion.
Yeah. So I think we do have to include that, because in some cases, not that many, but in some cases, we're going to have to use probably, what would we use now? We'd use Q-bonds or we'd use T-bonds? We'd use Q-bonds.
Q-bonds.
Yeah.
So, Senator, I might just mention for the sake of the committee and just to set context, the executive order was set out for the executive to try to determine and prioritize what he would recommend to the legislature in the context of the budget, what capital projects we'd like to fund. Obviously, you can do this in a lot of different ways. He chose a certain allocation of what were predicted bonding capacity. We certainly anticipated that prediction would change over time. I think you're absolutely right about the prescriptive nature of the absolute dollars in categories. I think everyone is fully aware that that's going to be fluid over time, given a lot of different dynamics. And I think as far as prioritization, the governor was interested in trying to align capital investments with policy outcomes to the degree he could, and you see in the order a segregation and now groups of folks making recommendations to him. So OEIB in the education side, his charge to them is align those capital investments to the degree possible to meet the outcomes that are in the 10-year plan. Obviously, that's from his perspective. And so it really is just a framework to try and align the capital side of our investments with the operational side of our investments through program. And so it's really just a framework to produce the recommended budget for the legislature. I don't think it was ever envisioned as a process for the legislature to use to deliberate on that budget. So I just wanted to make that clear.
The other thing that's out there in terms of the executive order, and I know that when these requirements come in, you don't always have the time or the resources, and it doesn't mean that this is so prescriptive that you actually determine what all of your costs are of maintaining buildings of renovation of buildings and use. Just say that that's a fixed cost and you're never going to look at doing something different. But it didn't appear that at that time there was really a clear understanding of what all the state's liabilities were in terms of buildings.
Right.
And what those core costs would be, so that the numbers that you were determining in the allocation was based upon some expectation in terms of how much you'd need to be investing on a regular basis. And
I think, Senator, I think the allocation was more driven by a prioritization of the policy outcomes than it was necessarily by the need side of the equation, particularly for state infrastructure. So I think that's an accurate statement.
Welcome. I heard you just from a little committee meeting.
You're getting a little heated down there. There's only $300 million.
Give or take.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Can I weigh in just a
little
bit?
Yes.
Because I kind of read the memorandum here, and I have to tell you, it kind of bothers me in the sense that we have delegated to the governor a lot more authority than I think any legislature has ever done as far as what we've done in education, what we've done in health care. And to ask us to give more to the governor as far as capital construction, if I'm reading this right, and I apologize for being late, but that seems like an awful big ask. And so,
is this the Utah example, Senator?
Yeah, that's
okay.
What I was looking at.
Okay.
And I fully would appreciate his input on things. But on the other hand, as a legislator, I think we have a duty to represent our own personal districts. Mm-hmm. And right now, the authority that the governor has is tremendous in comparison to the legislature. So I would be very hesitant to give any more authority to the governor, but and I'm not. Is that one of the asks, or what are
no,
we?
No. Actually, I think we're just having a general discussion today about the work plan, and we kind of said that, you know, Representative Buckley and I brought forward this bill not in reaction to the executive order.
Okay.
I think Representative Buckley and I may think, you know, that it's good for the governor to have looked at these issues like this, but that we don't, I mean, there have been bills in the session to basically put the governor's executive order into statute, and I don't think that Representative Buckley and I are there, and I don't think the majority of legislators are there.
Yeah.
We do need to have some discussion about the process for capital, maybe what changes that we can make to just get a little bit more logical process, and also to make people, at least the legislature and the governor, but the legislature, when they're making final allocations, knowing that when they're making one allocation, they're actually making a choice that is going to preclude them from making another allocation. As I said before, we're not the federal government. We can only obligate so much resources.
Well, may I speak?
Yeah.
I agree, and I think that's really, you know, we are restricted as to 5% of the cash flow, but I'm not sure that that's in statute anywhere, and I think maybe it would be a good idea for this committee to put it in statute.
Well, I think...
Because I think that's important, and I think if there is one thing that the public is asking for is a little bit more transparency as to how to rate the projects and that sort of thing, so it's just not something that comes about. But I thought last session where we had the projects come in and give their little spiel, and I thought it was a lot more straightforward. But I think those would be the two things that I see, and I think it is really imperative that we lock in statute the limitation.
Yeah. Well, I think you could look at language on the limitation, but I don't know if you'd want to lock it in directly, because one of the things that happened, if you go from session to session, is I believe in 07-09, we were doing this on the basis of 5% of future anticipated income. Mm-hmm. Then future anticipated income declined, and we temporarily went over 5%.
Well, but that could be written into the details.
Well, yeah. And in one that's why, and I think it was a biennium previous to this, that we literally had no GO bond authority for new, because we're trying to get it back down under 5. And, of course, we have the standard on lottery now that we try to keep it to 25. One of the things in this is, in terms of other issues coming forward, I can give a couple of examples, is that the regionals are a little bit different on the university system because of going to cube bonds. But one of the problems the big three are having is if something isn't an F bond, so there's no income coming from it. It's not a new building, so it's very hard to get donors for it.
Geez, I don't know which one you're talking about.
Well, there's several.
It's Portland State.
Well, several of them, actually.
Oh, okay.
But you have sort of core major buildings on campus that are in need of renovation.
Yeah.
But they can't get the match for G-bonds. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're going to have to figure out that. Then if you looked at this, if you had any time to look at the list, I mean, you could point out 20 or 30 of these, but one that I looked at was OYA. And not so much their regional facilities, and there is some real question about the future of McLaren and the future of Hillcrest. But if you look at OYA facilities, it looks, once you get away from the regionals, all in what's the terminology used? In significant need of...
Attention.
Yeah, I didn't say in significant need of a bulldozer. It said in... I just said, well, during the entire period of time that you built new adult correctional facilities and you built regional OYA facilities, you didn't do much to maintain...
Major work overdue is what you...
Yeah, major work overdue. So that's... and there are a number of different areas like that.
Yep, there are. Yeah. I happen to have an office in one of those areas. Major work is overdue.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Chair, I mean, you've been talking about choices that you make. You choose to build a new building rather than to put money into deferred maintenance on existing buildings. And I mean, not you specifically, but in general.
I mean, he
does that too. But, I mean, that's another choice, and we have tried to put some amounts available for the university system before in a deferred maintenance package, and they have a list of they prioritize what they need, but it's never enough, and it's the first to go, and the same, we used to do the same thing with the Parks Department, where they had a huge deferred maintenance need, and it was always this buy more parkland. Let's don't renovate existing parkland.
Well, this is a kind of a flippant comment, so I don't know if there's an actual, but and the problems in this building aren't that simple. But if you look at these two buildings, this building and the library building, to the layperson, it does appear that it was a priority to do basically the ongoing maintenance on that building or to make investments in that building. That building seems to be, when I've been in it and on various floors, it seems to be in incredibly good conditions. And it's not...
Because there's no traffic in that building.
Well, yeah, there's no traffic. But this building...
It's in the same condition it was 40 years ago.
but the reality of it is, though, is that every time it's become an issue, we'll get into your discussion on your committee, every time it's an issue about this building, it becomes a political issue about whether to make an investment in this building. And a lot of times people have said, no, it's not the right time. And I'm not speaking in favor or opposed to the... But I mean... But I just think actually knowing what's happening in sort of that backlog of deferred maintenance on major facilities is something the legislature should be more informed on.
Sure. And Senator, and to Representative Smith's earlier comment, George isn't at the table, but he's... we did get an appropriation from general government this budget to start to think more clearly and be more knowledgeable, if you will, about what our deferred maintenance issues are on state facilities, at least, not necessarily OUS, but we're attempting to do that. We're having our challenges, as we have in almost every question we run into in state government. The fragmentation of the data among the different owners of the buildings is a bit of a challenge for us. And so we're working our way through that. But I'm the first to tell you we need better information about what our deferred maintenance costs are when we are thinking about building or acquiring something new. we really have to do life cycle costing on those things so that at least the decision makers go in with their eyes open to say, yeah, it's $40 million to build this building. Oh, by the way, it's going to cost you $1 million a year to maintain it if we're going to keep it in the same condition, yeah, or whatever the numbers are. We don't do that well, aside from the decision-making processes that go on around capital. We don't give enough information, and it just hasn't been a priority for us in the past, and I think we're paying some of the bills on that these days. So,
yeah.
In response to that, too, I did propose legislation a couple of years back, and I think it was the Utah model that had part of the – do I have that right, Raphael? That part of any project that gets funded would have deferred maintenance as part of the original bonding package. Mm-hmm. And I know it means it would be had to change statute. Right now, statute says you can't put deferred maintenance for a building into that project, if I'm reading the statute correctly. You have to change it. But I think it's a logical way to go. It does mean there'd be less bonding capacity for new projects, but you'd be embedding in the project the funds to do the maintenance on that project as part of the overall funding for it.
And Mr. Chair, I think that's why we looked at Utah, and I think Aaron passed out. I only got the first page of it.
And it
was just because we know there's always interest in what do other states do.
Right.
And we've heard Utah has a very robust process. We don't expect, and Senator Gerard was looking at it, and we wouldn't say, you know, do it the same way as theirs because the governor has all this authority. I would never say that. I would say great, if you wanted to do something like that, you would create a legislative board to do this, you know, that process. But they have a very transparent process, to your point, of having projects reviewed, prioritized in the public sector. We just provided that as one example of another state that does something. And they do require 1.1% of the needs to be allocated every budget cycle towards capital repair as a way to build in that what Mr. Jordan was talking about, that long-term. You build a building, but you have to operate it, and you got to fix it. You know you're going to have to fix it some time down the road, so you should be planning for that right from the beginning. So,
it seems kind of funny that deferred maintenance has become such a major problem, and it is. It's just that we do not manage it well because it's easy to put it off. So if we were talking, Representative Buckley talked about a statute, mm-hmm. It seems to me like when you get an agency budget that you are required in that agency to do your deferred maintenance. That's just, that's where I think the statute should come, because if we do it a different way, then that stays on the book for your capital construction, mm-hmm. Then we run up against cap problems. So I just think that it's a question of management, and I hate to put it back on the executive branch, but I think that's where it belongs.
Senator, I appreciate your, and I'm relatively new to this process, but I will dredge up an example from the 14 session. We came to general government, we being DAS, came to the legislature with a problem out at the state data center regarding the infrastructure. When the state data center was built, it was all of that infrastructure was bought new with a COP, 5-year COP, about $40 million worth. And the assessment of that $40 million was put back on the agencies who moved their equipment into the state data center. However, I think it was discussed at the time. I was not here, but there were pretty significant budget problems over a number of years post the building of the data center. And while the debt service on the COP were in the assessment, there was no other money put into the assessment to replace that equipment. So in 14, we came to the legislature and said, we're in year 8 of a 5-year plan for replacement of this infrastructure. And so now what we're doing is we are front-loading replacement of that infrastructure. And we are also assessing agencies for what will be a sinking fund to continue to replace that infrastructure over time. Now, IT isn't exactly analogous to buildings, but the principle is the same. And I would submit that it is not a management issue, Senator. It's a discipline issue of all of us together. I've worked for a lot of elected bodies, and it is very difficult, if you're in a city, very difficult to contribute to deferred maintenance and not pay for the cop on the street.
Exactly right. I mean,
so those are, and those are the kinds of challenges we all face together, I think, on this issue. And it is a difficult issue to get over. I'd be happy to try and engage in a discussion of how we put more discipline in the process, both at the managerial level, but also at the deliberative level, at the decision-making level. So that's I think, where we are.
But going away from the IT example and sure. going back to buildings, I think part of the discussion at the legislature that's problematic is the definition of deferred maintenance.
Sure.
Because obviously, I think people don't believe that entities should be deferring maintenance, and it does get into what the priority is at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the maintenance that you would do with current staff that you might have to maintain buildings. I mean, that you might, or that you might have somebody come in and treat a roof every 3 or 5 years. That's a routine maintenance. Or you might have someone look for any, any water coming into a building, if there are any of the seals on a building. I hate this building. But deferred maintenance isn't, and that's what can happen if you don't do the first portion, is I've got to replace a roof. I mean, I've got to replace the whole roof. Or I have to replace the entire heating and cooling system for a building.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's just simply that things age out. Sometimes it's they haven't had the more routine maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
But when we discuss deferred maintenance, I think sometimes the legislature views it as, well, they should have just kept better care of the building, not that things do actually wear out. And I think there are some, and you can take the examples of, I'm not saying the buildings could have lasted, but if you take McLaren, there's been a lot of the first type of deferred maintenance there, that the money just wasn't there to maintain the buildings. I mean, just the routine maintenance of the buildings. So, okay.
Just,
where are we now?
Just if I had one more comment on in the comment on discipline. The reason I think that it should be part of the bonding package in some respect is that's the one area that enforces discipline. When we're in situations of crisis, we're cutting budgets, the one thing we can't cut is our debt payments. Mr. Rock won't let us. Therefore, I would like to see if there's a way we can put that into the debt payment part of the budget so that there is no other choice. Because, again, given the choice of, and I thought you put it very well, the cop on the street, and we're in a situation in the past 5 years where we're looking at, do we cut this program knowing the impact it's going to have on Oregonians, mm-hmm. or do we cut back on basically a material object like the parks budgets for deferred maintenance, which we did, and so again, I would think that enforced discipline would be where I would like to look to.
Yeah, well, I would think if you could include some of that in the bonding you would do for a project, that obviously I would also think there would be restrictions on its future use for anything other than that. And,
yes.
And that might
Absolutely.
Relate to the bond itself, actually, mm-hmm. whether or not.
Right.
So we have all this material that many of you just actually have received in the last few days. And I think one of the benefits of some of our meetings later are going to be that we won't be during legislative days, so we'll have some more time. Our next meeting will probably be in July. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about July 4th. What do you think?
That's an interesting thought.
It gets me out of some parade.
Yeah. I'll have some free time.
But parades for you should be fun now. I don't
oh,
know.
Yeah, I'll just put little rollers on the crutches.
But, and like our earlier meeting, I'm cognizant, but actually in this case, it's Senator Drott and myself that are reasonable distances from the Capitol for the members, and both of you are fairly far, so I think we'll try to find some dates in July that will work. Is there anything you wanted to get out on the table a little bit more, Mr. Jordan?
For this group, for this task force, it seems to me that what the legislature's process is and what, you know, what information we can get you so you can be, let's say, more deliberative in the way you think about capital investments. And I guess I would urge one other thing, that there's a difference between defining and making transparent what we perceive to be the need, whether it's new or maintenance, and how we fund it. Those are different things, and you probably have some abilities to inject some discipline into the system by the way you fund things. Mm-hmm. I think the basic data about our facilities that we get to you, or the needs, if you will, we can do that, and we should do that. And so we want to think about information. How do we get you information? But I think more importantly, regarding how you go about metering out the money and what kind of discipline you put in the process, it seems to me the financing tools are an important thing for you to think about. And I don't know what that means necessarily regarding statute, but it seemed to me those are the kind of realms of the problems we face. And so I think the governor's executive order certainly is putting us in a position where we are trying to mine the data, make sure we understand better what those trade-offs are you were talking about, as we propose the governor's budget, try to understand those things better. To the degree we can be transparent with the legislature about those trade-offs, I think that's a good thing for everybody. So I think for our work program, maybe we should think in those kind of realms. That's my suggestion. I don't know about information you might need before the next meeting and what your intent would be as far as scope.
Members and Representative Buckley and I will talk and see what we might need. I think, too, one of the things is what we discussed earlier is one of the things that really concerns me is the kind of items that are in the middle that come on the table and the new items. I mean, I'll give you an example of one that's been around for a while. When Senator Schrader was in the position I'm in now, we had a lot of discussions that we could have been literally out of the business of funding community colleges capital. We would have literally had no more debt for community colleges. But there were community colleges that were basically crumbling. There were some that couldn't pass any type of measure. They were still important for the education infrastructure. So we came up with this theoretical plan, not in statute, not even, I don't think, even in a memorandum of understanding, that we try to do $40 million a biennium for three bienniums. Of course, the third biennium, it went a little bit over that, I believe. And then, of course, this last biennium, we had a $112 million request.
Geez, I don't know who wanted that.
And, of course, we have some restrictions in there, hopefully, that will hold. But now, once those, if those come to fruition, we will now be about about a quarter of $1 billion in debt for community colleges without any actual sort of plan on what our future is in terms of what we will fund. Then you just start to add to that. You've got the treasurer's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the courts that are knocking at the door.
Mm-hmm.
There's school districts are knocking at the door, and that is there may be some areas there that we can be involved in, but really that's you could use up the entire state's bonding capacity over the next 10 years and barely make a dent.
Back to the deferred maintenance question, I like what you had to say about not all deferred maintenance is equal. And the example that I gave, there was a request for a 20-year advertisation on removing moss from the Roaring River fish hatchery from the roof. I'm sorry, that's just basic care. I mean, I can remove moss from my own darn house, and that just goes on with basic care. Right. Whereas the IT project that you are, I fully understand that you probably, you know, you have to come back for. So it just seems to me like we could break down what is deferred maintenance that we think that every agency should maintain a minimum level, and these things are the exceptions that you could bring before us. And I think that's probably a good direction to go.
And I think your general government subcommittee was asking those
questions. That's what we're working on scheduled maintenance and those kinds of issues.
And just for the record, that previous approval that was from some bienniums ago that did have the moss
removal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think bond council removed some of those projects.
Well, they did because I think that was the only thing in my district, and I said, this is stupid, so they took it out.
So, Senator, just for my clarification, your statement seems to go to the notion of role of the state.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I'm happy to engage in that dialogue, if you will. I feel a bit inadequate.
I think part of it is the role, because there'll be more requests coming in.
Yeah. And, oh, no question.
And, I mean, I don't really have that much of an issue with community colleges in terms of, but I would want it to be planned what we're doing. And secondarily, I don't want to become, for the state to become the first and only choice. I mean, community colleges do have the ability to go to their local electorate to fund projects. I don't want this to become, we haven't passed one in 20 years. Why do we even consider it? We'll just wait for the next project to come up, where the state will fund half of it.
Right.
So, and courthouses scare me.
I have the same problem with state troopers right now.
Yeah.
And, Mr. Chair, there's seismic. You have M&N bonds. Yeah.
I didn't want to bring up seismic.
Right. Because
I had to listen to a discussion in a different forum about huge needs, which you probably have heard several times. Mm-hmm. You know what says to that.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going to get the money in the next session.
You know what the source of seismic discussion is in the building?
Yeah, it's near $300 million. I'm just thinking how much capacity we're going to generate.
Yeah, but I mean,
this has been a happy discussion.
Yeah.
this discussion usually ends about here.
Yeah. So our next meeting will be in July. Aaron will query people for dates.
Okay.
I think Senator Girard may be okay with us kind of deferring to the other two members to some degree that have to come distances.
I'll do
so. Yeah. Okay, with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Right on time.
Thank you.
Right on time.